We humans all dream. Most of us just don't pay much attention to our dreams. But those of us who do listen intently to our night visions might access a whole new world. Dream work plays a big role in different types of therapies, like Jungian psychoanalysis. And for Roland Evans, dreams have been a part of his vocation since he joined a dream group during the 80s when he trained to become a psychotherapist. I invited him to join me for a Mind Mingles, which is an open and free webinar type of format where I interview different therapists from this complicated community about their passions. The following recording of the Mind Mingles I did with the wonderful Roland is the first time I publish an unedited conversation, complete with questions from the audience. Enjoy.
So glad that you could make it and also get up as early as you did. I really appreciate that. Do you want to delve straight into it, the topic of today? Your work, that is?
My work, well, it's a little interesting because I'm actually keep saying I'm retired, but I'm not, because I'm working very hard at the moment. I do a lot of different things. So I see about 2 days of clients still, and my mm-hmm. clients are pretty mixed, but I tend to try to see people who are over 40 because I'm in my 70s. So, you know, I tend to work with people who have done a lot of therapy, often have spiritual practice, often have a lot of self-awareness. And so it's a very different kind of work that I do now from what I did in the past. I trained in the 80s, early 80s. So I've been doing it a long time. And so I've seen a lot of different kinds of clients and have quite a lot of different experiences. So just a little bit of background. I trained in England and I moved to the States in 1990. And so when I was here, I was a teacher or a professor, they call it here, at Naropa University, which is a Buddhist-inspired contemplative university. So it's very different. So I taught there for about 16 years doing transpersonal psychotherapy and other different classes as well, because I got very interested in systems thinking and chaos theory. So I taught classes on that, taught classes on psychotherapy and did a lot of supervision and kind of stuff. So I...
Roland, what's systems thinking?
I'm sure there's some people here who know a bit about some. People have heard about systems work in relation to family systems. Mm-hmm. But systems thinking is how to think in terms of the way things are connected rather than the things themselves. So for instance, you and I are having a conversation, and there's all the other people listening in. And you would say somebody is also moving some machinery by the sound of it. And so you and I, already having a conversation, create a difference than just the individuals. So there's more and different happening here because there's now two pieces connected. So if you think of the universe, everything is connected in different kinds of ways. And if we think of things as very separate and kind of units of separation, that isn't actually how the universe is. That isn't how nature is. It isn't how human beings are. Our body works together. Everything works together. So does our psyche. So it's about patterns of relationship when you're thinking systems thinking. And when you're thinking of a human being and you're doing psychotherapy, there's a unit which is me and that other person. It's not me doing something to them or being a therapist in separate from them. I'm affected by them. They're affected by me. We've got a mutual interaction going on all the time. And hopefully I have a model or models in my mind of where we might be going, and they have different models. I always say it's a kind of battle of worldviews when we're doing psychotherapy, because if you've got a more positive worldview, your worldview needs to actually win. I know that sounds strange, but there's a pattern going on. I don't want to get into this too much because that's a whole nother area. But if you want to read stuff about that, it's a lot of stuff on the web. And anybody who's worked in systems thinking kind of goes back to a great thinker in the 50s, 60s, 70s called Gregory Bateson. He actually invented the double bind theory of schizophrenia, which is wrong. I knew it was wrong, but it's a very good model for why people get into a mess with their families, how neuroses is kind of set into the pattern in the family and also into the person. So that's systems thinking. But basically, I was in Edinburgh in the 70s up to the 80s. And my wife-to-be and I joined this dream group, which was run by this extraordinary person. She was 96. She'd been a psychoanalyst for about 50 years. She was trained in the 1920s as a psychoanalyst in London. And she had moved from a more psychoanalytic approach to a more Jungian approach. And she did dream groups every day at 96. She also saw clients. She did prayer groups on Sunday. She was very spiritual, but not really very Christian person. She was just an amazing person. And we'd be about 10 of us would meet once a week. And as students, she charged us £5 a semester for a whole term of going to it. So she basically had a special student rate, which was almost free. And we would sit around in her front room, and she was quite elderly, and she had big headphones on because she couldn't hear very well, and she was very wobbly on her feet. And then we'd just share dreams. We wouldn't share much about ourselves. She had this very interesting approach, which was you don't need to know anything about the other person except their dream. And so we would share these dreams, and I still remember the dreams, actually, from that time, which is a very long time ago. So, of course,
your own dreams or everyone's dreams?
Other people's dreams. I remember specific dreams from that time. She was a wonderful person. She was a friend of Lawrence Vanderpost. Some of you might know him, you know, a great writer from South Africa, and also Prince Charles and other famous people. She was in communication with Jung early on with letters. So very influential in my life. And she died at about 98. She was still seeing people. She just died in her bed and one day didn't wake up and go to her therapy sessions. But before she died, she went completely blind, both eyes, just overnight. And I met her after that, and she said, and she's very Scottish and quite kind of strange in her Scottish way. She would say, you know, the funny thing is, it doesn't really bother me. And that's somebody who'd gone blind. So as a person, she had an ability to hold things very lightly. And she didn't say much in the group, but whenever she did, it would really hit you hard. You wouldn't actually know where it would come from. It'd be very intuitive. Anyway, that's my background in dreams. And I've been listening to dreams for over 40 years. So I worked out that I probably listened to about 20,000 dreams, my own included. So, and I, you know, my wife and I always share our dreams if we have them. So dreams are really a way to access information about you at a deeper level. I think Jakob is Jungian, so he probably does a lot of dream work, does he?
Yeah, yeah. And I go to him with my dreams. I mean, he's the only one I go to with my dreams. Yeah.
So everybody dreams. And it's so amazing how many people, first of all, don't think they dream, but actually do. And also when you're in psychotherapy, how if you start asking just a little bit about dreams will start coming. And they start coming. And for some people, they just come more and more and more. I mean, I have clients who I'll see, and they'll have, you know, 5 or 6 dreams in a week, which they want to tell me when we can maybe deal with 1 or 2. And so you have to be kind of efficient with dreams after a while, because they can take a long time to unravel them. And ask me some more questions about dreams, so it gives me some guidance.
Yeah, because, you know, I've never had dream analysis. You know, it's only my friend and colleague Jakob who I, you know, very regularly ask about my dreams. So someone as much of a newbie as I am to the world of dream analysis and dream work, can you describe what working with dreams entails if I was to undergo dream analysis?
Well, see, I don't like the word analysis because I come from a Jungian point of view where, yeah, they call themselves analytic psychology, but that it's not really analysis. It's in some sense, it's a kind of an associational and intuitive method where you recognize the dream as a communication to yourself from another part of yourself in a different language. The language is metaphoric and symbolic, and our conscious mind has lots of difficulty with that kind of language. We love stories, but we often can't grasp what the story is about unless we kind of work hard at it. And it's the same with a dream. A dream is a story, and it's a story about us to us. And so when you start to approach that, you say, okay, so what is this dream trying to convey? So how am I in this dream? And you can then say to yourself, and then how am I in my life? And how do those two things relate? So, for instance, I had a dream last night. And in the dream, there was this leak in this, like a system. And I had to go and try and turn off the knobs to stop the system leaking because I was going to leave. And I knew I was going to leave, but there was people still in the house and I didn't want to shut off the water completely. So I turned off one knob and it worked. And then another knob just kept turning round and round and I knew it didn't work. So I knew to myself in the dream, I needed to go down into the basement and turn off the main system, where the water comes into the house. But then I was in a dilemma because the people had to stay in the house longer than me, and then they wouldn't have any water. So that's the dream. Okay, so what do you do with a dream like that? Well, you start associating with the word leak. So what could I be leaking? Well, water is an energetic kind of medium. So you think, okay, so it's something I'm leaking and it's often associated with feelings. So could I be leaking feelings? Could I be leaking energy? Could I be leaking something physically? Could something be wrong? So that would be one thing. And then the next thing is like, okay, so now I need to leak. And actually, in the dream, I have this thing where I can work on the dream sometimes while I'm asleep. So I got a kind of sense of what the dream might be about. I know that sounds strange. If you've worked on your dreams a lot, they start to kind of open up a little bit. So, you know, I'm working on some aspect of myself, emotional aspect, which I feel is a bit leaky. It's my irritability, basically. So when things bother me, I get irritable. So it's a kind of a leak of energy. And so I try to turn that off at one level, but that's actually where you can't turn it off. You've got to go deeper. So the dream would be saying to me, you have to go to a deeper level in order to work with this issue, okay, because I can't turn it off. But it's a relationship thing. So there's people involved in this. So I've got to think about how this is going to affect other people as well. Okay, so that's a kind of a little simple dream interpretation. Does that make sense?
It does, completely. But also, and this might be kind of sad to say, I think I consider myself one of those, you know, people who I don't really dream. So what would your advice or suggestion be? Do I need to make sure there's a notepad next to my bed? Like, would that be enough to make the dreams come? Or do I just need to first thing in the morning, give it a thought? Like, did I actually dream?
Well, it helps if you have a therapist who's interested in your dreams, then the dreams will come. That's the first thing. But the main thing that we forget about is that there's different aspects of ourselves and we're working towards integration to have more connection. So you have to talk to yourself. I spend a lot of my time talking to myself, which I find you don't want to do in public, but it's actually very helpful. So you want to create an intention. So your intention is that you're going to listen to your dreams. Now, your unconscious will respond to that intention. It won't necessarily respond immediately, but the stronger your intention is, and the stronger your interest, and the stronger you will pay attention to the products of your unconscious, the more it will give you. So that's the main thing. And putting the piece of paper and the pencil beside your bed is a sign of your intention. Yeah. So it's a communication. Everything is a communication. So you're wanting to communicate. So I'll go for periods of time where I won't have any dreams, and I'll be like, oh, this is kind of getting boring. I'm just sleeping and not remembering anything. So I'll say, okay, come on, I need a dream. And I'll get it. I sleep very deeply. So I'll sometimes be just waking up, and then it's like, I know there was a dream. Oh, come on, can I have this one? But your unconscious can take it back very quickly. So you'll have the dream, you'll remember the dream, and it can slip it away out of your consciousness in a matter of a millisecond, and you won't be able to get it again. So it's a relational aspect. Does that make any sense, Fiona?
Yes, and I also wondered, are you a lucid dreamer? Like, do you do that? Because you said you could analyze your dreams in your dreams, which sounded very meta. It sounded remarkable and meta and like someone who has worked for as many years as you, you know. I tried not to.
Yeah, but you know, often I can't understand my dream at all, no matter what I do. Okay. So it's not all. Lucid dreaming is a different thing. It's a technique. I have a little concerns about lucid dreaming. I think it's an amazingly interesting thing. And of course, mm-hmm. most people will have at least one lucid dream during their life, but they may not remember it. and there's different levels of lucidity. You can have a dream where you know you're dreaming, and that's one level of lucidity. And there's another level of lucidity which doesn't come often, where you know you're dreaming and you can direct the dream. Now, the issue I wonder about is that you have to be careful about the way in which the conscious mind wants to control everything, as we know. So it'll want to control the unconscious. Well, the unconscious might actually not like that. And it might rebel against your need to control it. So it has to be a relationship. You have to basically ask permission if you want to do that kind of thing. I find it too much hard work. It's a long training to get lucid. So you can work on that. But the dreams themselves, you know, they're basically things which are about us. So we just need to pay attention to them, even if when we wake up in the morning and there's a certain feeling that we have, even if you write down that feeling, that will actually lead often to some dream thoughts, because they're there somewhere in the back of your mind, but there's kind of gates which you have to get through for the conscious mind to actually connect to the symbolic language, because it rejects it, doesn't like it very much, doesn't understand it. So anyway, that's the dream stuff. I mean, the dreams, let me think. Who told me a dream yesterday? What was that dream? Oh, I had a really lovely dream from one of my clients. Now that was the week before. She was spinning in the dream, spinning round and round a pillar. And that's the main issue. And she was feeling as though that was somehow releasing energy and that she was beginning to understand something or other. It was an insight, basically, that she had about her life and that she needed to move on from something or other. I can't remember the details of the dream. I hear so many, they sometimes slip away. But I can't really understand how, I know that's strange, how therapists don't do therapy without dreams. How can you do therapy without dreams? Because you're faced with what the person's consciousness is giving you, and that's the picture that they give you, but we know it's a distorted picture, otherwise they wouldn't be in therapy. So you're listening to a distorted picture or a story, but the unconscious doesn't give you distorted stories. It doesn't know how to do that. So it gives you other information. And so you can, even if you don't work with the dream, you can still say, oh, okay, I think we're actually working with this issue, even though the person's telling me about that issue.
you ever had a session where a dream did not take part of that hour?
Yes, lots of. I have, particularly men, you know, they have difficulty remembering their dreams. Women are much better at it. So you get some very hyper-rational men who basically their rationality won't allow them to hold the dream very easily. So you don't get much in the way of dreams. But you get mostly, yesterday, how many? One, two, three. I think most people gave me a dream yesterday, even if it was just a snippet. Yeah. I don't see very many people. I try not to see more than four people a day.
Okay. But so you also mentioned, yeah?
No, sorry. Well, you were also interested in transpersonal.
That was what I was going to bring up next. Because you also, you know, you mentioned it in the introduction you gave of yourself. And yeah, and I was going to ask you to describe transpersonal psychology to someone like me who has no experience in this field.
Okay, so we have to back up a bit, which is, what are human beings like? What goes on with human beings? What are the things which are important to human beings? Yes, the person comes to us because they have issues, they have problems, they're suffering in some ways. But human beings are always concerned with meaning and with purpose. These are the things which keep us alive and passionate. And many, many people have unusual experiences which they can't talk about because they think they're weird. Who was it I was talking to recently? I'm just thinking, one of my clients. Yeah, she was telling me that she started to have these kind of psychic experiences when she was a child, but she could never, ever talk to her parents about it because the first time she mentioned it, they cut her off completely. And so she got freaked out and then did her best to kind of stamp down this kind of information which was coming to her about things. If you've worked with a lot of people who have been, say, sexually abused particularly or have terrible abuse, you'll often find the more severe the abuse, the more likely they are to have strange experiences, psychic experiences. The way I look at it is that if you have a terribly unpredictable environment, you do everything you can to get more information about what's going on, to the extent that you switch on abilities that most of us don't have, because you need those to survive. Human beings are incredibly adaptive. So that's one aspect, which is that as a transpersonal psychologist, or in that field, I'm open to whatever a person brings, and the weirder the better. The trouble with a lot of rational kind of psychotherapy is that it neglects the whole meaning, purpose, religion, spirituality, weirdness, strange experiences that human beings have. But we all have them. And we have them in our dreams. Like, I have one client who seems to have, because I can't make any other sense, she has dreams very regularly of past lives. She doesn't believe particularly in past lives, but they're very regular. They're memory-like. They're not like a dream. They have a memory-like structure. They're always the same. This happens, this happens, this happens, and this happens. And it's at this, and she has like one, two, three, I think four different time periods in her life where these things happen. They're all traumatic. They're all horrible experiences. And most of her life has just been filled with horrible experiences, which are very similar to those. So you could say, well, maybe they're symbolic, but I just take them for whatever they are. If she thinks they're this way, then they are that way. Or if we think, okay, it's the previous life, that's okay. We just work with that. It doesn't matter. I've worked with people who've had, quotes, alien abductions. And if you've worked with that, you know that's pretty weird. Weird stuff. And the person I worked with was so interesting because she did not believe that those things had happened to her. But whenever we did trauma work, she would get these memories coming up and she'd have panic attacks about them with all these aliens doing nasty things to her. And so we just worked with them as though they're any other kind of trauma. And so what I'm saying is transpersonal approach says nothing at all is excluded. It doesn't matter what kind of experience, it doesn't matter where it comes from. It's included in you as a human being, and that's what we work with. And we take it really seriously, and there's no sense in which you dismiss it, what Jung would call the nothing but syndrome. Oh, that's nothing but your fantasies. Oh, that's nothing but your imagination. Oh, that's nothing but whatever. It's some brain chemistry gone wrong. No, no, you work with it because an experience is an experience and it's real. You don't know if it's true, but it's real. And that's the difference. Truth is not important. Reality is important. What a person experiences is important. Am I making sense here? I'm kind of on one of my little rants. Yeah.
I'm loving your rant so far. But that also makes me wonder, would you say there are any issues where this type of approach is particularly beneficial? Like, I mean, working with them in this transpersonal
way? So the way I work is I'm a very practical person. I'm also, you know, very much more, I like spirituality, religion, I study religion, but I actually don't belong to any religion. I just study it because religion is one of the most fascinating things that human beings do. And there's always this question, why is this so important? What is it that human beings are doing? So you approach it from that point of view. So, but from a practical point of view, if a person comes in and they're depressed, then you work with the depression. So I think of therapy as having three aspects. The first bit is you take really seriously the experience that the person's having and do everything you can to help them move through their symptoms and their presenting problem. And you need lots of skill to do that. It's not necessarily a technical thing, but you need to have a good grasp on, okay. So for instance, yesterday I was working with somebody and it's been really tough. She's got intrusive thoughts. She's not OCD, but she's had these intrusive thoughts of committing suicide off and on for a long time. Some of them seem to be familial. There seems to be a tendency towards it. Some of it seems to be triggered by medication. And then there's other things. What is going on here? So I've tried EMDR. We've worked with hypnosis. I've done a desensitization in vivo, and I was working in imagination. So, you know, I was working the techniques, if you like, because this is bothering her. She's a lovely lady. She's a fascinating person. And so this is kind of where I start to get a little bit more strange as a therapist than many. I was trained in Ericksonian hypnotherapy, which uses metaphor and uses story. So I just thought, okay, let's make up a story about this. And actually, I was talking to a very good friend of mine who's a Buddhist psychologist, and he was suggesting this too. I said, okay, well, and I used my own experience, which you normally don't do. I said, so when I was young, I was taking a lot of LSD. And one time I was walking along this headland in Ireland. That's where I come from. Beautiful place near Dublin. And as I was walking along the edge, I felt the edge. If anybody's taken hallucinogens, they'll know that these kind of things happen. I felt the edge collapse underneath me. I could feel it falling away under my feet, and I could feel myself falling down this cliff. And as I had that experience, I had this absolute certainty that this was because I had died this way in a previous lifetime. Okay? Now, whether that's true or not doesn't matter. So I crawling on the grass away from the edge, and eventually I managed to kind of calm down. But I could actually see it and feel it and know that this is what happened to me. Because how could I actually know what this feels like unless I experienced it? So I say that to her. I say, well, this is a story. And because one of her issues is that when she walks on a balcony, she has this feeling she's going to throw herself over and kill herself. She's got no suicidal tendencies at all. She doesn't want to die or anything like that. She's not depressed, anything like that. And so I said, so this is a story. And she said, well, you know, I've been having this weird thought. And I didn't, she hadn't told me this. And the weird thing goes like this, which is that there was this time in this period and I was going to kill myself, but I didn't. And then there was this time in this period where I was going to kill myself and I didn't. This is a very rational person. This is not a person who has any religious things. And there was another time in the 50s. I just feel as though I was going to kill myself, but I didn't. And now I feel as though somehow I've got to complete it. And I thought, well, that is really strange. I don't know what we're going to do with this, but that came at the end of the last session yesterday. Well, that is so odd because she has a whole different cognitive set around this than what I thought it was. I thought it was an intrusive thought, kind of OCD-like, we'll work with it. But no, this is something else, and I don't know what it is now.
So it's, yeah, she tapped into a new sort of realm.
Well, it's either a new realm, but you could say, well, it's a way in which she is trying to make sense of her experience. And if that's the way she makes sense of her experience, that's the way I have to go with. I can't kind of like try to shift her off that. And it's interesting. I'm thinking, well, now we're in a completely different realm because I was thinking we were just trying to deal with a symptom, but there's something much more complex going on. So there's the symptom part. But then the next part when I'm working with somebody, usually I'm pretty good at working with symptoms and presenting problems because I've done a lot of it. Then you get to what I call the insight phase. This is where the person is more involved in self-awareness, self-exploration, trying to find out what they're meant to be doing in their lives, who am I kind of questions. And that's kind of mainly what I like to do. And I see a few clients like that. And then the later ones, people who've done a lot of that kind of therapy, then it's more like, so what is my life about? What is it for? What am I meant to be doing with this? When I'm on my grave, when I'm in my grave, what will I want to have left behind me? What's my legacy? So that's very different. That's what I call a kind of transformational stage. So I think of there's the first stage, which is symptoms, the next stage, insight, third stage, transformation. And some people work all the way through, some people come at different levels, some people go back and forth. It's but it keeps me interested because I'm very curious about what I'm going to get to work with next.
Yeah, it really shines through, and I'm not even watching your face, unfortunately, but your love and curiosity for this work, I mean, for the human psyche, it's very apparent. I also am conscious that I really want to give the people here today the chance to ask you some questions, but I have one final question, which is, for someone who is still wondering whether dream work or transpersonal therapy is for them, do you have any resources, any advice
that would make it
easier for them? Yeah.
Well, yes, it's really hard. I don't know how big transpersonal psychotherapy is in Europe. I mean, it's quite a developing field in America, certainly around it. I know this sounds weird, but I just assume that every single one of my clients, no matter what age, at least actually has some sort of meditation practice. I just assume it. It's kind of like par for the course now here, particularly where I live. So resources. Well, you know, if you are, it's kind of a tricky one. I came to psychotherapy and psychology through Jung, through reading his Memories, Dreams, Reflections. And that, as soon as I read that, it's like, okay, this is it. I had no doubt in my mind. That was it. I'm going to do this. I have no idea what he's talking about. I was totally naive. I didn't even know the word psychology when I read that book. That just so shows that. I was a carpenter and a farmer. I'd been a farmer. I'd been a carpenter. I'd worked here and there. I mean, I was quite late. I left school when I was 15. And did all sorts of things. So One of the things to do is reading, watching videos, and trying to get a sense of like, okay, so what is it I'm looking for? I don't necessarily separate, you know, transpersonal from any other kind of psychotherapy. Any good therapy includes a dimension of meaning that's there, you know, that you're helping the person with their meaning. So I don't know about specific resources. I do not like a lot of the spiritual literature. I find it kind of unhelpful. So you have to be very, you have to pick and choose. So Jung is the person I always go back to. You know, I used to read the Sagioli, if anybody knows him. He's an old guy who did that stuff. You know, Stanislav Grof doing the breathwork stuff. I don't know. I can't really. It's a kind of like a, you know, it happens kind of, what's the word? Synchronistically, you know, things happen. Mm-hmm. And you have to follow them. And if you're a searcher or a seeker, things will pop out somewhere. You know, as they say, when the student is ready, the master appears. So there's that sense in which things happen. I always say every single one of my clients is a synchronistic event. I don't know why this client is coming to me, but they're coming to me for a particular purpose and reason. And it's for me as much as it is for them. So This is another opportunity to learn. So I think if you have a good connection with your therapist, that's really all you need. And be brave, I would say, be brave and talk about the weird stuff. Just, you know, if you're a client, just say to your therapist, you know, well, I had this really weird thought. And if you can, if the therapist is really engaged with you and open, they will just help you kind of unravel that somewhat. And then you'll find that you'll be pulled in towards a certain path. I just want to say this. I mean, I find it extraordinary to some of my clients. One client I saw, he did come to me for kind of self-development stuff, more transformational stuff. And he found along the way that he wants to become an Orthodox Christian. Well, he's an American, and Orthodoxy is very, very unusual here. And it's like, okay, and now he's dedicated to Orthodox Christianity, and I'm having to see him and his wife because his wife is really freaked out because she doesn't particularly like Christianity. So I don't know where that came from. Then another person who came to me for all sorts of trauma work, the one I said to, you know, had these weird traumatic experiences, she actually has suddenly, out of the blue, decided she wants to become a Jew. So she's now studying Judaism. And it's like, that's really weird. I could never, ever have actually thought that would happen. You know, it's just amazing that some people, when you start them on path, they will find something which completely grips them. And then it helps them. Anyway, so that's probably enough answers. Like, go to your home, read his autobiography and think, my God, he's so weird, and he's very screwed up, actually.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you made me in the span of 40 minutes, you've made want to never retire, ever.
No, you can't retire until you die.
Yeah.
But I also
realize that now.
That's one of my favorite things, working with dying people, too. That's, I've done a lot of hospice work, and actually I had a client who died, I think about a month ago, and that was a lovely experience. But that's difficult because you do home visits, mm-hmm. and working with a person in bed is actually very different skill set. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was a matter of love and death. Is that what it's called? The Yalom and Marilyn, like Irvin and Marilyn Yalom book, where...
Oh, yes.
They write it together, and he also does a lot of work where he goes to people who are dying, and I think he actually at one point, that's the lovely thing about Yalom, he's like he admits to all of these like almost like boundary transgressions, or yeah, where it gets quite blurry because it has to in our work, but where he actually, you know, accepts the invitation that his client gives him to like lie with him
right.
or lie with her. I think like the
yeah
the,
yes
the dying, you know, the dying client. Yeah,
touch is very important to somebody who's dying. Mm-hmm. You know, you mm-hmm. I know it sounds strange, but it's kind of absolutely normal to hold their hand when you're talking to them. Doesn't
yeah.
matter. It's just, it's, it feels very natural. Yeah. And as you say, the boundary thing, which we could talk about with, at length, because I'm a great one for very strict boundaries, which are very loose.
I love that topic. But I'm going to open the floor and, yeah, just anyone who wants to ask Roland anything can unmute themselves and just jump right into it or raise their hand. Julia?
You, Julia?
Yeah. Hi, Roland. Hi. Thanks so much for your presentation. I actually had a personal question, and I'm wondering whether this is a matter of sort of training the dreaming interpretation muscle. But and I've had sort of transpersonal experiences with psychedelics and such and breath work. But when it comes to my dreams, I have one of two reactions. Either, and I have very vivid dreams, very detailed. Either I'm like feeling completely blocked, like I do not have the slightest clue. I have zero association. I'm just like, I've heard, you know, I don't know, someone's shopping list. I don't know. It just tells me nothing. That's like one reaction I might have. Or the other one, I'd be like, yeah, I kind of get it. Like, yeah, this is the situation in my life. And so what? I guess I'm sort of expecting like an insight, you know, like you gave the example of the dream of your dream with the leak. Like, I don't know, I'll have a recurring dream where I need to go to the bathroom and I go and there's all these different dirty bathroom stalls. And so I guess it's like I can't find my place in life there. I can't find a place to relax or something like that. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I know. Like, so what? And so I have this like disappointment with dreams.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay. So the difficulty you have is that you're approaching the dream from a very conscious point of view. But, you know, bathroom dreams, for instance, are very, very common. And you know, basically, are you dealing with your shit? So you've got to look at that at a somewhat deeper level. Yes, it's one of the, at one level, it's like I can't find my place to settle. But then you have to ask, why bathrooms? Why not somewhere else? It could be a car, or it could be something else where you're not finding. So it has to be. There's something more that the dream is trying to point you towards, and that your conscious mind is having difficulty grasping this. And as you say, it's like, so what? Or else it's like, okay, well, I can't make head nor tail of it. So one of the things is to not try to make head nor tail of it. Just sit with it. Just sit with it and say, and enjoy it. I would call it appreciate. Just appreciate the fact that there's such a creative aspect of you, when even when you're not feeling very creative and you're having these really interesting, weird experiences while you're asleep, that to me is kind of a first level that you go with dreams. Don't dismiss them. That's the thing, because if you think about that, if you are disrespectful to that part of you, it's going to be pissed off. So why would it ever give you any information? It's because you're not listening, you know? So it'll sometimes give you a smack on the wrist too if you're not careful. Okay, I don't know if that helps a bit.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Does anyone else have any?
Come on, ask some questions.
Curiosity. Victoria.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you very much. It was spanning different thoughts in my head. It's hard to divide like therapist part from the just the curious mind when asking a question. But I wonder, I noticed that dreams quite often disturb the sleep in terms of like, I remember, so I had one instance, for example, when I was like, okay, I really wanted like be conscious and remember my dreams. And then my sleep quality like really deteriorated. I would like wake up so much. I would remember lots of dreams, but my sleep was terrible. So I was like, at some point, I abandoned this idea because it was just too disturbing for my sleep. And recently, I'm also sleeping badly and seeing lots of dreams. And I'm like, gosh, I really don't want these dreams. Like, I really want to have my sleep back and not see all the dreams. And as well, like with work with my clients, I noticed that a lot of people do have disturbing dreams, and something that is affecting quality of sleep, so that people can't really sleep well with that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's working. Okay, so right, that is true. If you actually make a very strong intention to remove your dreams, it will actually mean that your sleep is lighter. So you can't see my hands because I gesture all the time anyway. So you'll get, you know, if you know how the sleep works, you know, you got deep sleep to start and then you go up and then you go into a dream state and then you go back down. So you know that there's these cycles. Well, what happens if your conscious mind gets too engaged with the dream, or you're wanting to hold on to the dream, then you stay at this lighter level of sleep, and it does, it disturbs your sleep. So you have to negotiate around that. And that's what I would say. I would say to you, okay, I want some dreams, but I don't want you to disturb my sleep. Or I will say, okay, that's enough dreams. I'm done with you for a while. Or just give me one. I'd be more efficient. When I was in her therapy with a Jungian, I used to see her every 2 weeks and I'd have one dream on the night before. And that was it. I wouldn't have any other dreams that I remembered. Just one dream the night before. And so you can kind of almost train that, but it does take a little while. Disturbing dreams, I tend to think that there's no such thing as a nightmare in the sense that it's like a bad thing. It's what I call loud dreams. And some dreams are incredibly loud in the sense that they're very disturbing. Because you haven't listened. You've been stupid and not listened. And so the message gets loud. So if there's a nightmare quotes a dream which is disturbing, it's demanding attention. Now, even if you don't work with dreams as a therapist, you still give it attention. Just letting a person tell you their dreams is often enough to shift a recurring dream. That's it. Recurring dreams will recur often until they've been heard and something's been done with them, then they go away. It's just a kind of fact. I mean, they don't recur after they've had some attention. So always, if you're hearing, you know, what I call loud dreams, just give it some attention. Give it the attention that it's asking for, and find out what the person needs to do with that. But as you say, be careful. Don't sleeping is really important. Don't disturb your sleep too much with dreams. Any other?
Well, I actually think this would be a great way to to end this. Yeah, also just to be mindful of other people's,
right,
you know, meetings and your own morning rituals, Roland.
Oh, it's my day. I don't have much to do today, except I visited extraordinary person who is very, very strange, brilliant guy who I've met recently, and I go and visit him, and he's got Parkinson's, so he's getting the end of his life, and I'm trying to get him to tell me about his life because he's had such an extraordinary life.
As a friend or a therapist?
As a friend, I'm trying to record him. He's got material. Anybody ever heard of a guy called John Moriarty? No, brilliant, what we call a mystical ecologist from Ireland. Somebody has heard. Was that Rosalina?
Rosalina. I think it was Rosalina.
Yeah, it was me, but I just briefly heard about this topic.
Oh, yeah. John Moriarty is quite an extraordinary. He's beyond ecology. He's the next level up, basically. But anyway, this guy has some of his writings from very early on, which I'm trying to get out of him and trying to get into this archive in Ireland. And it's just been a job.
Beautiful. Well, I hope that goes well.
Thank you so much. You're a wonderful
person. No, thank you.
And you're doing amazing things. And it's so good to have a lot of people involved. Anyway, thank you. Bye-bye.
It was a very invigorating conversation. So thank you for that, Roland.
Thank you.
And everyone else, have a lovely day, evening, afternoon, depending on where you are in the world. And I will see you soon, hopefully.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
If you liked this raw format of open conversation followed by a Q&A, you'll be pleased to know that you can join the next Mind Mingles, which I host every second week when there's not a holiday. just head on into the community at community.complicated.life and you can see what's on next. Also, in the community, you'll find an open and free space about dreams that you can sign up to. So if you want to ask about a specific dream of yours, or if you have other questions about dream work, join the space and ask away. Finally, and as always, feel free to get in touch with me if you have topics that you'd like me to do an episode about. Until next time.